Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
fighting. Right now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are trying to do it right, you all. We are doing our best in this country, in this world, to do it right. But they are some forces of evil that keep working against us. But we are here to connect the authentic voices working in the battlefield, struggling in the trenches, you know, fighting for democracy, fighting for justice, fighting for equality, equity. And so this is the show that brings those people together so we could see how expansive this struggle for human rights truly is. And today is an interesting day because I am celebrating the second anniversary of the show, Voices from the Battlefield. And that came about all because of the visionary Bernie Hayes, that he's going to be with us. But I do want to say the opinions expressed on Black Radio Hall of Fame are those of the program host and not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame. So we are here live at Harris Stowe, the only historically Black University in St. Louis, and so it's an honor and a privilege to be on the show and to have in the studio none other than Bernie Hayes. And today I got a twofer because the host that comes after me, Bob, who you've heard before, not just the music, but actually I had a chance to interview him. So those folks will be with us today. So welcome to the show, Bernie and Bob.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks.
So, you know, we, first of all, I just want to say that this has been an incredible year to have a show, and I can't believe it's been 2 years now, and so I just keep thinking about how fast time is going and how we should be slowing it down and being more intentional about what we do, how we treat people, and what's going on in the world, and if we can intervene in any kind of way to make it go a different direction than it's going. And so there were some attempts to do that. Elections help to do that because they have consequences whether there's a chosen winner or loser. And so we're going to talk about some of that today. So it's open season on what we're going to talk about. But I do, there's been some things on my mind about what's happening in St. Louis. So, you know, we had the election last week, between Cori Bush and Wesley Bell. And I had often said when I spoke about that election that it really is more than the candidate Cori Bush running. And that's because of how much money was put into that, the opponent's race, which meant that that was going to push that seat in a whole different direction. And so that's why it was important to hold on to it. So, you know, we got another set of elections coming up that could be consequential, whether the orange man wins or lose. And so, because already, according to reports, he's going back crazy because he sees what's happening with Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And so, so to me, that means when you're that narcissistic and you got all these other sociopathic tendencies, you get ready to do something out of desperation, and that's really is scary for this country. So, and then there's a whole issue of what's going on with the St. Louis public schools. So I'm going to start with the congressional race first. What do you all think what was going on there, and how, you know, Wesley Bell won? Was it just the money, or did folks who could vote didn't vote because they're sick of this political shenanigans? What do you think happened?
I think that it was a election of non-substance. I only saw negative ads. I never saw anything positive from either candidate. I never heard Wesley Bell said what he's going to do, except keep abortion legal, make abortion illegal again, and also Cori Bush. But they just attacked each other. I mean, all of the money was spent just attacking one another, and I saw no substance whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm not surprised at the outcome, because, I mean, there are tons of money spent for Wesley Bell and not half that much for Cori.
Right, right. What about you, Bob?
Yeah, I think people are just afraid of really taking a strong stance, even if they believe it sometimes. I really do. I think, I mean, I'm gathering this from some of the people I talked to. I think they really, on some level, did agree with Cori Bush. I mean, Cori Bush. I just put the same thing, right? but they're afraid to take that kind of a stance.
But why would they be?
And even if they didn't articulate it publicly, right? Bob, nobody's watching them when they go into the ballot box.
I know.
But it's really the fear. People don't understand the psychology of fear.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Because even when nobody's watching, because it's in your head.
It's self-censoring.
Mm-hmm, Well, you know, I think that for Cori Bush, I think one of the things I kept saying, we've seen what she's done. We've seen the amount of money that she's brought to the region. A lot of the ARPA money, you can't get that unless you have the active participation of your congressperson.
Right.
And we got more than any city in the state. And so we have to really look at, like, the relationship that the mayor had, and that's what you want. You want the mayor and the governor to all, and the congress people all to be in sync, because it has an impact on what you can do locally.
A lot of people don't like that, going to the city.
Right, exactly.
But you knew it, but so many people just watched the ads and listened to the ads on radio and television. They didn't think she did anything.
Mm-hmm.
They kept saying she brought nothing to the city.
Right, because that's what the Bell commercials were saying. Yeah. She's not done anything. She's not even been in voting. And, you know, it was just a lot of lies. But, you know, to me, and I can say this because I've actually been campaign managers for some candidates, is like, if you have to stoop to telling lies about your opponent, or you have to stoop to going and taking their signs up, you know, I'm not going to be a part of that, because that says something also about your character, but also about how you going to be a leader.
Well, if there's no substantial reason to oppose them, you have to make it up. I mean, why are you opposing them? Right?
And you know, that's real, because people will say, well, why is he running? She's doing pretty good. In fact, some people would say that she was doing better than her predecessor.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Then when all the money start coming in, then they say, oh, it was really her stand on Palestine and the ceasefire that generated all this extra attention. And so the squad became the targets.
Right.
And one by one, they're going to get squad members.
Knocking them off.
They started with Jamal Bowman, and now they got, you know, knocked off Cori Bush. And so, yeah, and so that part to me really said something about our country in terms of, do we really want a democracy? Do we want all voices, all people to have active participation in the way this government is going to go? And so clearly the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. So we'll see. I mean, he's the Republican opponent probably is not going to win. I don't know, you know, what Cori Bush's you know, plans are now. I know I was at the victory party, or I should say the non-victory party, but she said that she wasn't finished. And so I think she's looking at, like, what role she can play now.
Well, you know, there's something else, a kind of a personal connection with Bell. You know, one of my homeless friends who got involved in, I mean, he was almost set up to commit a crime, so to speak. I mean, it was like it was nothing he chose to do, right? It just almost happened to him. But apparently that was one of the cases Bell sort of zeroed in on to look kind of tough on crime and really hung Quentin out to dry.
Mm.
Again, I don't know a lot about it, but that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
It's you know, I when people start using other people, you know, to in that
to
way.
To advance their career, yeah. Or to punish somebody else. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he talked up the Palestine issue, you know, against Corey.
Yeah.
You know, because she stood for what she believed in.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and she still put out a lot of folks believe in.
Well, and that's what I said at the very last rally that she had. She was the first one to advance a ceasefire.
Right.
And now, like, 70% of the country believes it should be a ceasefire. And that's across political spectrum.
Yeah.
So when you have a visionary that says this is the right thing to do, and people will see that once we take a stand, that is absolutely what happened. And so still, I mean, the fact that you have a group, AIPAC, whose singular focus is around Israel by any means necessary, then anybody that looks like they are in opposition, and you don't even have to be in opposition, you just look like you're in opposition. But when
or they paint you in opposition.
Right, right. But you know, everybody sees what's going on in Gaza. It's clearly genocide. So it doesn't take long to persuade people that the ceasefire absolutely has to happen. And it hasn't, and it's just more bombing, more killing, more, you know, kids dying. So we'll see what happens in this next interim, and then beyond November, or I should say January, when Bell is sworn in. What exactly is he going to do, and is he going to be a puppet of AIPAC and all those folks?
I have a question about that. At first, he was going to run for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. Why did he switch, and who made him switch?
Oh,
ask him to switch.
We know that because guess what? The actor Harper Hill exposed him on national TV. The same people that brought that pot of money to Bell brought it to Hill. And he's like, no, I'm not, because he would have been going after, I think, Ilion. And so he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to go for this seat. But they already had a pile of money for him should he had taken the offer. And he said, I didn't take it, but that guy in St. Louis, Missouri took it.
Yeah.
So it was clear then, like, people brought the message to him, like, don't go after Hawley, the white guy that's part of what we need to keep the Senate going and this message going and this policy going. You run after the black woman, and we'll give you a ton of money to do it. So I think, you know, there's all, for me, it's always lessons to be learned, you know, whether you win or lose, and, you know, what could we have done differently. And I do know that some of the areas that, you know, while we were canvassing in, people are just disillusioned with electoral politics. It's like, you know, my life hasn't changed regardless of who. In fact, half the time they don't even know who the mayor is. They don't know who the congressperson is because nothing's changed for them. So I think that group of folks we got to do something different with. And because the Democratic Party only sees the value of those voters when it's election time as opposed to some ongoing thing to keep them engaged and keep them active, then we're going to have more and more folks. Because, in fact, the last election for the 13th Ward, you know, there was a 9% turnout. Now, come on, that's criminal. 9%. So let's talk about the what's going on with the public schools, because we just, you know, got the bad news that the new superintendent, who I don't think made it to a year, has been ousted, and now there's an audit going on. So why can't we do right by our babies that are left in public school?
Don't look at me. If I had my way, the whole system would change. But I remember when we didn't have a black superintendent, and we had to negotiate to get one into the system at that time, and they were doing wonderful things, you know. And right now, I don't know if this last, I guess, person who came into this position just wasn't right, and she wasn't vetted properly, I don't believe. And if she was, she came in and she maybe got the illusions of power.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I really don't.
I don't.
It's pitiful.
And because she came in where there was a hefty surplus and now is leaving the district with a hefty deficit, you know, I think people are now looking at where was the board when all of this was going on, because, you know, she's answerable to the board. And her policies were not the thing that got her into trouble. Was the hiring of friends and family, and, you know, expenditures that didn't have anything to do with the education of our children.
But didn't she have to go through human resources for that at the board?
I would think that there would be some accounting of what's going on, especially if it's in the millions of dollars, because you're looking at people being hired. Yeah. Okay, so what are we creating roles for these people? I mean, what are they going to do when they come here?
Yeah, she should have been hired through human resources at the St. Louis Board of Education.
Well, the board is who hires the superintendent.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm saying even the request for positions has to go through the board.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what part of the responsibility they take for what has happened, but they got to take some.
Something broke down.
And so now I know there's a lot of finger pointing, but guys, we're starting off the year. Our babies don't even have transportation.
I know. An issue.
Yeah.
They can't get to school. But
they can't even get to school, and it starts, I think, this week.
Yeah,
it's coming week.
Next week. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so what are we going to do?
You know, what gets me, too, is it seems like whether it's housing or education, there's just people who are using it for their own gain. I mean, they have no business in roles like that involving education or housing, whatever it might be, but that's they see it as a career move, a cash cow. I don't know how to explain it.
I think you're right, because even when I look at the police chief that was hired, mm-hmm. okay, he should have had a salary of about $125,000. That wasn't good enough, so the police foundation added another $100,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now he's feeling like he doesn't have to be answerable to the people. He doesn't respond to sunshine requests. He doesn't respond to some meetings. It depends on who it is that he's answering to. I mean, we're going to have a show in a couple of weeks of the 1,000 unsolved homicides.
Right.
And the National Public Radio and the Marshall Project, for 2-3 years, try to get information from the St. Louis Police Department and just refuse to participate. So how are you going to have somebody that's supposed to be a public servant in those positions, and they're accountable to who? Supposed to be accountable at least to the mayor, but we as taxpayers are paying their salaries, and it seems like we're the last ones to have any control or input.
Do you have any investigators? No one's actually asking these people who they are and what they're doing. The the press used to be a medium where they would vet the different people. They would check their backgrounds and so forth and put it out there. But they're weak now. Nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Right. And since we only got one daily, then it really puts it down. But to your point, Bob, about like something happens when almost like this intoxication of power, and it sometimes it's the power of the position, but sometimes it also is the money that comes with mm-hmm. that. But it does seem like there's a certain allure about the power that this position brings and what you can do. And for some people, that means it's easy to abuse it.
Yeah,
because if you think you got it and it's yours.
Yeah, I mean, you forget what you're supposed to be there for.
Exactly.
And you enjoy it very much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's going to happen with the St. Louis Public Schools. There was a meeting last night. I didn't get back in town until late, but I really do want to know what happened. What's going to happen going forward with the way that the board operates because they're the checks and balances, but apparently there needs to be checks and balances. Well, I mean, the meetings are open and people come and it's televised, but sometimes you sit in there, but you don't know what to ask. You don't know what's wrong, or you don't understand how these things fit. So you may not know the question to ask. And yeah. So, you know, sometimes I'm there and I'm just looking and I'm asking questions, but you know, they got a pat answer.
They have internal fights on the board, I understand.
Yep.
Vicious.
Yeah. And again, who's watching out for the children?
Yeah.
And so we got, and I mean, one of the things since I've been doing the shows, I've been talking about education. We've talked about the challenges in public education in particular, a teacher shortage, the teachers that are there, they're demoralized. And so what is it now based on this latest thing that's going to make people feel good about the upcoming school year? Can you imagine you being a teacher and you get ready to go back into that?
It's hard enough just doing the job, right? And then under these circumstances?
There's shortage of teachers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They won't give them a proper salary to recruit new ones.
Right.
Then
right.
Everyone wants to come to the district.
And not only that, Bernie, but this has come up at least in the list of things that teachers really would want. It's either one or number one or number two, and that's just respect.
Mm-hmm.
They would take that over the money.
Right.
But you get no money. Then you get no respect from your school leader, the principal.
That and then you, the enemy.
Yeah, exactly. And then sometimes, you know, some of these school principals create enough chaos to have the teachers at each other rather than looking at them as somebody they all need to be holding accountable. And so it is really a toxic system. And so these bureaucracies really do need to be cleaned up. And I think part of what some of us have been trying to do is to get more people on these citizen boards, on these commissions, on these committees so that they have some real input. Because these folks are in need of some help. They really do need some other eyes of folks who don't have a vested interest in the power. They only have a vested interest in the mission of whatever it is. And I just kind of shake my head about, like, we are a week out and the kids don't have buses, and then they're probably not going to have supplies, and then the teachers are not going to show up because they know what's getting ready to happen. Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be a hot mess.
Are other organizations like you, progressive organizations, networking about these issues at all?
See, I think for some of the organizations, they're pretty much one or two issues. And so I'm trying to think of an organization where education is a part of that. So, for example, you might have an organization that deals with after-school programming, you know, violence prevention, and so they got an after-school program. Well, that may or may not help the public schools, even though some of those kids may be a part of that. But even now I'm hearing that some of those people can't even have a relationship with the school to get the kids because somebody or some principal doesn't want to, you know, they really don't want anybody coming in to see the mess, but we already know it's a mess. So, you know, again, our community's got to come together around the kids. You might not had a dog in the fight between, you know, Corey and Wesley, but surely you see what this is going to, the negative impact this is going to have for this generation of kids to be in the public schools with all this chaos and toxicity. So, but I'm going to move to something really positive, and that's the Olympics. Now, I didn't get to see all of them because I'm into the gymnastics and the track.
This is between you two. I
don't. Yeah.
I loved it.
But, I mean, people were commenting on the hue of the participants, meaning they're talking about black folks, because there were black folks.
There was even a black swimmer this year.
Black swimmer, but also there were black participants, even if it was from a white country. So they managed to find some black folks. But, you know, the irony of it is, and this is what I told people, I said, they love them when they're winning for their country. But if those folks were to be walking down the street without their gear on,
mm-hmm.
they would be treated like any other person. Mm-hmm. So let's not have any illusions about the Olympics, okay?
Japan had a black sprinter.
See what I'm saying? You know,
Japan has a black sprinter.
Yeah,
who was in the finals?
Yeah,
100 meters.
Yeah, so these folks were breaking records. I mean, it was just really fascinating to watch. And of course, I'm a Simone Biles fan, so whatever she does is just like totally amazing. But yeah, I think you know, even that's political because they were going to try to take away Jordan's.
Well, it'll be 2 years before they make a decision on that problem.
You know, and they wonder why these young people have mental health issues in the Olympics. But you know, I think I can't remember if the U.S. was the top gold medal.
They tied with China.
Oh, they tied with China. I think so. Yeah. I think there were 40 gold medals.
I think China
for
I
both
think
of them.
With China.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had overall.
Yeah.
Medals. The United States had the most overall medals.
Well, you know, if you are just joining us, we are here celebrating the second anniversary of Voices from the Battlefield, and I have Bernie Hayes and Bob Hansman with me talking through some of the issues that have recently dealt with, but, you know, now I really want to go to the last year and what's happened and how one thing leads to another, and it's all connected, but I thought about what some of the top shows were for me, and I know I seem to gravitate, and I know why, towards human interest kinds of stories. So, for example, the story of the Downwinders, and that was Tina Cordova, who was with the Tularosa Basin folks, who were the first communities that the atomic bomb was dropped on. So a couple of weeks ago, we had two Japanese Americans who were talking about the atomic bomb internment and the reparations for the dropping the atomic bomb. And I kept, something in my head was saying these are connected, but it didn't really hit me till afterwards that the U.S. government has dropped bombs on its own people. They were tested first here in this country on people of color before they were used on
the Japanese.
And so that's got to be a connection that people have to see that, you know.
A lot of folks don't know about it.
They don't know about it. And with that Oppenheimer movie that received all the hoopla and the Academy, they made it clear that no communities were affected by that. And you had to think, that's a lie. And so that's really why I had Tina Cordova on, because they've been dealing with generations of trauma and health issues from the bombings. I mean, imagine everybody in your family has some form of cancer. And so they got a little,
from the radiation.
And they have passed some kind of law where they get some benefits. But what's the point if you are suffering? I mean, some money is not going to help you at that point. And so, so looking at the conditions of Japanese Americans and looking at the folks right here in this country. And then I thought about the spraying that they did on the Pruitt-Igoe people, and we had Ben Phillips here talking about that.
Zinc, cadmium sulfide.
Like, we are just guinea pigs. And then what they say when you start trying to, like, research, investigate, protest, it's like, oh, that's national security. We can't talk about that. That's basically how they shut down the Pruitt-Igoe lawsuit. Like, it's national security. We can't tell you what was in those chemicals and what it did and what it, we just can't talk about it. Well, there's people here that are affected, and some of them still don't know they were impacted by some spray that was going on that they thought was mosquito spray. I mean, really?
Yeah. That, one of the tragedies of that era, man. I mean, Pruitt-Igoe was, people are proud to be a resident of Pruitt-Igoe. People are proud to be alumni of Pruitt-Igoe. And half of them do not know that they were sprayed. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how much Ben told you about that, but
no, I saw the documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And Ben only found out it accidentally.
Really?
I mean,
mm-hmm.
It was a thing.
I mean, if she, yeah, that one woman hadn't, the
yeah.
one dug. I mean, she's the one who
yeah, it was
broke
a,
it where the rest mm-hmm. of the world knew about it.
Yeah, so here you are going through life. You know that people in your family got cancer at a higher rate.
Oh, this
but
is
But you
crazy.
Just think this is normal.
Yeah. Or it's in your family.
Right, yeah, it runs in your yeah. family. But yeah. But then when you start peeling back the layers, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
All of this is because of a spray when we were kids playing
yeah.
and we had no idea what these people were doing to us. So, you know, it's
that. You were taught not to question it.
That too.
Well, yeah.
But again, to me, Bernie, it's like, what do you question? You see somebody flying over. Okay.
You figured it was somebody spraying for you. Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's it, exactly.
That's why a lot of people
yeah.
thought it was
yeah.
for the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's, you wouldn't question it until,
yeah.
like, what would make you question it, really?
Right.
Nothing. And especially if you saw that it had government markings on the plane, you said, oh, okay, our government. Yeah. Our government.
I thought the government would lie to you.
Yeah.
No.
And then years later, it's hard to, like, make that connection, you know,
mm-hmm.
immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And what you just received is terminal, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in different cases all over the country, whether it be out there with the burning oil or whatever that is burning out there in North County that's been burning under the earth for like decades. I mean, the government still will not do its due diligence to clean up the messes that it's made or to hold these corporations accountable when they make a mess. And lots of times it's because they're around communities that are poor and working class,
yeah,
and they're like
powerless.
Yeah. Keep on protesting. You can protest all day long. We're not doing a damn thing.
Even the medical waste that was.
Yeah.
Neighborhoods.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you think about health, and I know I've done a number of radio shows about health and healing. It's hard if you got all these issues that are created by the government that is supposed to serve and protect you. Then when you try to get medical treatment, you got the medical industrial complex. Like if you don't have some insurance, you're going to get an aspirin and be sent home. That's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got some good insurance, they're going to run tests. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. So, you know, this whole notion of medical treatment in our health is to me a big deal at this point in time. So now we not just have the health, but the holistic part of it, which means mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because now people are realizing the connectedness of those. You can't have good mental health and bad physical health. They're so intertwined, they just stick together.
It's
so
nice that health and wealth sound so similar.
Right. So just looking at like the health of most communities, particularly poor and black communities, and I would say particularly with mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do is drive down the street in a black community and you see the impact of these bad policies on our people. They're, you know, homeless, they're talking to themselves, they're just in bad shape. And people don't want to have to look at homeless people in any city, but this one included. So they keep pushing them here, pushing them there.
And they're criminalizing them.
Yeah. God.
They're criminals. It's homeless,
yeah.
You know how
it's a crime to not have money to support yourself.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we really, all of us one paycheck away from, you know, not paying mortgage, losing a home, whatever.
Yeah.
And so when we look at these people on the street, we don't know what their stories are.
Exactly.
But they do have stories,
and
most of it is not unsimilar to one we might tell.
Mm-hmm.
If you get put, you know, get a lose a job and you can't pay rent, and these folks have no compassion for you. You pay rent, or you got 30 days to get the hell out of here. Now what do you do? And then they have this system where they can find children and women shelter, but not men, as if they don't. I mean, this is what happened with this public housing. Men don't need to be in subsidized housing. They need to be out doing what? I mean, there's vulnerability.
Like they're not affected
human.
By it.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the welfare system wouldn't allow men to be in the house.
That's right, what I'm saying. Exactly. So automatically you have this system where men are supposed to be able to take care of themselves. They're not vulnerable. They're not humans. And well, so, yeah.
And then another layer of that is once you've sort of busted up families like that, then you condemn the families for not being intact.
Yeah.
It's like, boy,
Single household, female household, did we hear that, you know, in the 70s.
And the stigma, woman with being a single parent.
Yeah.
They stigmatized them, yeah. Well, she didn't have a husband.
And the system creates this whole thing, right? And then
but I think that's the, really the tragedy of it all. It's almost like some kind of vicious cycle where you never really break from it because the system is set up to keep you like on this little wheel and then keep criminalizing you, saying it's your fault, but you don't know what caused you to get there because it wasn't your fault. Somebody outside of it was playing the role of how you were going to move. So even when we look at a Team 4, for example, there are certain communities got those labels. And no matter what they tried to do, they could not keep their communities intact. They couldn't get a loan for a new roof. None of that. But yet it was like, your community looks like this because you're not doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's always somebody else there who's responsible for what's happening here, but we don't. We just blame the people that are immediately right there.
Mm-hmm. So you don't pick up your trash or clean your streets.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, but that's stunning,
isn't
it?
Yeah.
When other people are dumping in your neighborhood, right?
Of course,
Yeah.
So Bernie, what else have you seen? I mean, we all got different perspectives because we travel in different circles and we from different, I think me and Bob might be from the same generation, but looking out at this stuff in this city, in this state, in this country, what are the issues that bubble up for you that need immediate attention? We need to be all focusing in on that.
Education.
Yeah.
When I first came to St. Louis in 1965, I could not believe it had to pass a bond issue to keep the schools open. I thought that was a joke. I really did not believe that until I really started standing out in the press.
Wow.
They said they had to pass a bond issue to keep open the St. Louis public schools.
Mm. Wow.
That was the first impact that it had on the schools in the city.
And they've been trying to pass them ever since.
Ever since. Uh-huh.
And it's gone downhill.
Downhill.
Since 1965 that I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a mess. I've just never understood. And I'm not bragging about Chicago because Chicago's not much better, but they never needed a bond issue to keep the schools open.
Right.
That was priority.
Right.
You know, the monies would allocate it.
But the other thing they do, Bernie, is like your property tax is supposed to go towards a certain amount of it goes towards the formula for education. Then they have all this stuff around the lottery and all of that supposed to. So why is it that we're still begging and borrowing for our kids?
They keep lying to you. They said the lottery money was supposed to promote education.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't promote education. Mm-hmm. They'd say, well, we're going to put it in the general funds.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it for education funds. And then they'll keep diverting it for other different issues. It's not going to get better until you, public servants become better people.
Yeah, but where does that come from when each generation has been socialized a different way and the expectations are very different from generation to generation. And so when I think about a teacher that was in the 50s or 60s, that's not going to be the teacher of the 2020s. And the other thing you made me think about, Bernie, is these specials that are on Target has and some other people where you could help a teacher get stuff for the classroom. It's almost like a registry, like a wedding registry. Like they can put their name there, and then of course you're buying something from Target. So, but the teachers need stuff, and I know my niece is a teacher, and so she's constantly out of her pocket because she wants her room to look a certain way, and so she's buying stuff for the kids. And really, I'm thinking, okay, this is almost like double dipping because we got money that's supposed to be going towards the expenses that you now, what?
Well, when you was in the classroom, she had to do the same thing. And all of her friends at different schools in the city and in District 189 also, they were spending their own personal money to better their classrooms to get equipment that they needed.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It's unbelievable.
So where's the budget for the things that they're supposed to have? What? Who got that money?
Someone did.
We're back to where we started now. Right?
And I know I was a big, I mean, like, unconditional supporter of public schools. But I had to step back when the Roberti regime came because they just about tore up the school. They messed up the teachers were demoralized. The kids were, the grades were failing and test scores were going. And I'm thinking, okay, I now have to tell parents, think about it twice before you send your kids to public schools.
You know, you're very exceptional because a lot of folks forgot about Roberti. They forgot about the whole regime. They forgot about what was happening at that time. It's up to you to keep reminding
them. Oh, yeah, and I do. And I do with writing because I don't think the school district ever recovered from Roberti.
Never. Probably won't ever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this man also was a union buster, so a lot of the services then became privatized and still are privatized. So for example, if you had a classroom and you had a custodian, you had, you know, a few other things. It was really one big family. But then the custodians got a contract with a separate company, so they didn't see themselves as part of the school. But I often would rely on the male janitors to help with the male kids. Mm-hmm. And I remember one little kid, his mother was a crackhead and he didn't have a daddy. He would literally stay after school to help the janitor clean because he had nowhere really to go. And the janitor brought him some little gloves like what he used. Oh, it was just, I mean, it was really cute, but then you understand why, it's really, heartbreaking. But yeah, so everybody was working on behalf of the kids, and you know, if you knew something about this kid, then you say, hey, did you know such and such? That's why he's doing that. But now it's like, no, the kids are not even in the equation for real. It's really kind of sad. Not kind of, it is sad. What else, besides education, what else? And Bob, you too, what do we need to be doing, thinking about here in St. Louis and in this country? What's going to really make a difference?
Oh, God. Not just education like in the schools now, but I mean education about how historically we got to this point, because people don't want to hear that. They think that's some kind of a condemnation of themselves or their ancestors. They do not want to confront
racial injustice.
Racial injustice. I mean, they don't really want to confront the history of this place and be educated about it. Mm. In fact, they want other people to not be educated about it. Mm. It's quite the opposite. They want to suppress that knowledge, not just not promote it. Right? And that's the thing that drives me crazier than anything is this aggressive ignorance that they're trying to enforce on the rest of us. I mean, I sometimes joke, if I tried to teach what I teach in Florida, DeSantis would stop me at the border.
Right, right.
You wouldn't be there long.
I wouldn't be there long.
Right, yeah. Right. You'd probably be in jail, really.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't say gay, you know what trying to teach a curriculum would look like.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. This massive delusion we can't seem to live with.
I mean, to restrict the reading of books.
Oh, God.
That I can hardly believe that.
I can't either. Yeah. And they all accept this as just fine, just normal now. It's just...
So I'm thinking that one of the things around education is not just what people learn in schools in a formal way, but what are we teaching people about civics, about what
citizenship.
It means citizenship. What does it mean to
each
be
other.
A citizen? What does it mean to care for your fellow neighbor or whatever? That is pretty much gone.
I think
gone.
Citizen is a lost concept. It's just like we're just a bunch of individuals at war with each other, not with any responsibility to each other.
Because when you ask, like, do you know your neighbor, most folks will say no.
And I don't want to.
And
I don't want to. And I really don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm, you know, like, I'm totally.
Unless they're just like me.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I don't want nobody coming to my house. They might be casing. They might, I don't want to. It's just like all this fear mongering that has seeped through our consciousness.
Fear and anger.
Fear and anger. And that is what's propelling us in our actions and our thought. And that, I think that's just a sad commentary, particularly on this country, because when you look at even some of the European countries, they don't have the mess that we have in terms of, the profound races, in your face kind of races, the policies that keep coming. That
there are answers out there. We just refuse them.
Yeah.
And the curricula that are taught is not the same as it was when I was growing up. We said you have geography.
Yeah.
No one. I mean, do they teach geography?
Well, you know, when they
social studies.
When they deal with black kids, they say they're not going anywhere. Why teach that?
Yeah.
This was the rationale around getting rid of foreign language, even in the high schools. And when I heard that, and there was black folks on the board that were agreeing with that.
Yeah.
When you know a foreign language, whether it's a requirement for college or not, that just opens you up to a different kind of world. You're a world citizen.
Yeah.
But if somebody doesn't believe that and say, well, you should learn another language because you never know, you'll always be in your little neighborhood, that little 5-block radius, and you're not going anywhere, so why learn a foreign language?
I have a story to tell you. One of my former neighbors, in fact, he committed suicide, a young black kid, moved from St. Louis County to California, and he came back home to visit. And he says, Mr. Hayes, do you know there are black people in California that speak Spanish? He couldn't believe it. He says that he saw some other black folks that spoke other different languages. He could not believe that. He couldn't believe it. And I kind of laughed at him. I said, man, they're black folks from all over the world.
And black folks could speak a whole French, you know, Portuguese, some of everything.
He didn't believe it. It was just a shock to him.
Yeah, I know in our... the Youth Council's Saturday program, we of course teach Kiswahili, and so they learning it, but they don't, you know, they're going through the motions. But then somebody will come to their school from, you know, Tanzania or place, and will speak to, and they're like, you know how to say everybody, we learn it. So they get excited, but again, now they're connected with somebody in another part of the world, and they feel like, wow, it's not just about St. Louis.
You know,
I'm a part of a
something else besides oneself.
Right.
I always joke that we all think we're the norm from which other people deviate.
Right. But I think the citizen piece almost would have to precede some of the stuff around any kind of reform, because if you don't see a need for that, then you'll never stick your neck out to say, why come this kid doesn't have what they need on the first day of school? Like, it doesn't bother me. I'm not my kid. I actually hear some people saying they don't think they should have to pay personal property tax that goes to education because they don't have kids in the system. And now I have to say, oh, wait a minute. No. This is for the greater good. This is society.
Yeah.
So again, this disconnect between what is a good citizen and how they should behave in a democracy.
Because I think that was a prerequisite for a lot of the like civil rights movements and things, right? It's just citizenship, right?
Absolutely. And I just, when I think about citizens of the world, which I think we all should consider, because the world is getting smaller. You know, we can be on social media and see a lot of stuff that's happening in different parts of the world, but we also can connect with people in different parts of the world. So it's getting smaller, but we still don't have the skills and the knowledge of what it means to be a citizen, what it means to be an informed, engaged citizen that has the right and the responsibility to be a part of government and policies and laws. You know, the Organization for Black Struggle, in a couple of weeks we're going to have a community forum where we're bringing in Terry Kennedy to do a thing on how do you participate in government? How do you make a law? How do you understand what's going on? I mean, and we figured Terry Kennedy is the the person that can do this. He was
Kujalewa
Mukuma. He was an Alder person for them the 30 years. He's now clerk of the board of Alder persons. So his wisdom about
escaped
So he understands not just the law, but if you really are trying to radically change laws, what you have to know. And a lot of times even activists don't know it. And so one of the things that somebody was telling about, you got y'all's people, that's what they say to me, y'all's people are on these webinars and they don't even know the laws and how to pass them, and they're making demands that can't be addressed because they're against the law. So, for example, when the Charter Commission started moving with the recommendations that had been meeting for a year, then those meetings were made public, the final recommendations, and then people were like, we need to slow this down. We need more. And people were like, no, the law already had a deadline in it. The ordinance already told us how long we had. So people hadn't read the ordinance. You know, so that's the kind of thing that if we're going to be better disruptors of bad laws, we have to know the process for making a law. And so Terry Kennedy is going to help us with that.
Okay. You need to gather the information.
Yeah.
What do you need? What do you need to know? Do you need to know about the state statute? Do you need to know about city charters, city ordinances? It's not that complicated to know. I mean, we got a pretty quick tutorial with Terry Kennedy when we were doing the local control and civilian oversight. But you still got to know, you got to have a baseline of information, and some people are coming into it just things that are in their head that they think that they should be doing. And it's really quite fascinating once you see it. But I know we got a few minutes left, and the thing that I wanted to ask both of you all, it's similar to the question that I just asked, and that is, Ferguson through
Forward through Ferguson?
Forward through Ferguson is doing this thing called Unflinching Progress. And the question is, what do you think, how would Unflinching Progress look to you? What specifically would it look like? And the day I was asked that question, Chris Dunn had just been released. And so my response was, Unflinching Progress would look like that the state attorney general would not, every time somebody has been exonerated, throw a monkey wrench in there to keep them in jail longer. That's what it would look like. I mean, that's even against his own damn office. But he, you know, Bailey's not the only one that has done this. So for me, that's what I'm flinching. Like, as soon as we know somebody was wrongfully convicted, we're expediting the time that they're going to spend because we owe them 17, 20, 34 years. And now you're going to try to hold them up? So for me, that was what Unflinching Progress looked like. What does it look like to you?
I'll refer to Bob.
Well, for me, it's really personal. Unflinching progress would be that when my son leaves the house, I don't have to worry about if he's going to come back home. Unflinching progress would be creating a structure where my son is less likely to get shot. It's really personal.
Right. And it sounds fairly simple, but more and more,
everything's involved in that.
Everything's up for grabs. You cannot guarantee as a parent that your child will be safe.
No.
You can't.
And if you can't do that.
To me, it would be like informing people, getting them to know who they are and what they are and their worth. Jamala, you're very rare because, and Bob, too, you are involved in progressive organizations. You care about your community. But you look around you, except for those who associate with you, the average person doesn't know what's going on. They don't know what Unflinching Progress means. They don't even know. They forgot that Ferguson was 10 years ago. You know, a lot of them don't even care about it anymore.
Right.
And that's progress.
And they live so removed from the entire subject, the world, that, yeah, that, yeah.
Yeah.
And they, someone asked a question last week, the police chief in Ferguson, when the police officer was injured. He says, since they got what they want, why did they march? why was there a 10-year?
See what I'm saying? He doesn't even understand.
How ignorant can you have? Yeah.
But I like it when they do that, because then that gives you information about what needs, what more needs to be done. Because if he thinks this is a done deal, and I know a number of people think that, like when they say, well, y'all still marching, you got the voting rights, you got this. But that's just a small little piece of the reality. Yeah. And the other part, even around voting rights, we're still fighting for it.
Exactly.
Why? So in terms of a flinch in progress, we would not be fighting every so many years that black folks can still vote. So,
which I think, you know, but sort of citing things like that is an easy way to let yourself off the hook, right? Well, we've accomplished that, so there's nothing left to do.
Yeah, we're all now in a post-racial society, so y'all black folks don't need to be asking for nothing else, and forget that reparation
stuff.
You
got what you asked for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's I really do like that question, and I've been asking people that, just really kind of giving them something to think about. What would it look like? And if you say that's what it looks like, are you willing to fight for it?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to fight for folks who've been wrongfully convicted, and when they have the courts tell them this was wrong, I'm overturning that conviction, and you got an office, a state office funded by our tax dollars to say, I'm not going to let them out. And however long it takes for them to stay in prison, that's what I'm going to do.
He's done three people like that in
the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I'm going to ignore everything that we've learned in the intervening years. Right?
It's
unbelievable.
So that's going to be my question of the day. What is does unflinching progress look like?
Yeah.
Congratulations on your anniversary.
Yeah, there's some nice progress.
Yes.
I understand OPS is going to have their anniversary again this
year. Oh, yeah, this one's going to be, I think it's going to be hybrid, but this is the 45th.
45th.
And so we'll hear more about that in the future, a lot more in the future. But next week, we are going to have Chairman Omali Yeshitele on with the African People's Socialist Party, and people know that he's under severe state repression, him and some members of his organization, by the U.S. government. Here we go again with our government, our tax dollars being paid to go after people and take them through the ringer. But they're going to come and give us an update on what's going on with that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll round out August with Linda Nance, who tomorrow they're having a event at the Missouri History Museum, Legacy of Prejudice at the 1904 World's Fair. And I love writing about the World's Fair because it was such a big deal for St. Louis white folks, but not for people of color. So
it was a big deal, but just in the wrong direction.
Right. So tomorrow they're going to do something at the museum. There's going to be happy hour, and then 6:30 is the event. But she's going to come on, I think it's the 28th, to talk about the World's Fair. And Linda is the founder of the Annie Malone Foundation. And so, you know, I got a special thing with people who are stewards of the history and culture, and she's one of those people.
She's
one of those people. So we got a lot coming up, and if you missed any of the programs, you can always go to JamalaRogers.com. And I think there was something else that I was going to announce, but other than that, but I think
there it goes.
Okay, this is Jamala, your humble host. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Bob and Bernie, and we will see you on the battlefield. We're gonna do the right thing.